Hi, wow, there's lots of people here. It's very cool, everyone came out. Thanks to the White Whale, to Valerie for emceeing, Don and Joan for recording this. Justin's birthday is today, let's give him an applause. He's got a book coming out in June, and you can get a broadside somewhere with pre-order information. Aaron, I've known for 100 years, but the line about naked and I'm not ashamed, I did not inspire that unless I was really drunk. And Robert Gibb is in the back, and we're glad he's here. So I have a few poems here, and thanks to Jen Ashburn, as always, she put all this together, and she had some great poems. This is called Barcelona, and it's about a little town in upstate New York. They were among the first settlers here, not long after the war for independence was won. My father's people, square-jawed, Scotch-Irish Presbyterian stock, fishermen, farmers, and factory workers all, pale as salt and stern as the god that sent down fire on Sodom and Gomorrah. These are the people I never knew, but know through photos yellowed by so many seasons my grandmother left, when God in his mercy blessed her one October day with a stroke, and she was free of widowhood, colon cancer, and cataracts. It was here in Barcelona, New York, on the southern shores of Lake Erie that once swelled with whitefish, blue pike, and herring, where the first gas-powered lighthouse was built in 1829, where my father was born. Here, where Dr. Thomas Branwell Welch invented a way to preserve unfermented grapes, where Grace Bedell, age 11, suggested to Abe Lincoln that he would look a lot better if he grew whiskers. Here, where the winters last until midsummer, and here, where my life will surely end, just as it began, a speck of dust lost in a universe that rarely acknowledges the dreams of an ordinary man. Thank you. Probably the first poet that I really loved ever was Dylan Thomas, and this is kind of inspired by reading his New York journals when he would steal his patrons' shirts. And it's called Black and Tanned, after black and tan beer. Black and tanned, we hurly-burlied through the ship swaying of streets and doorways and maze of cityscapes, amid the sweat of clinking glass laughs, propelled by a taste for the tragic. In a bitter swill of blurred antidotes and redundancies, we have talked of heroes, villains, and the sacredness of socks. I have a few new poems here. This is called Among Strangers. And when I was a child, my mother belonged to a group called Kairos. It was a prison ministry. They'd go to a local prison and preach Jesus. And once a year, they had a retreat. And we would go to this church to listen to someone who was a prisoner talk about their experience among strangers. In church that night, we listened to a tall, pockmarked man testify about the grocery clerk he'd killed, the life he once lived. Standing in the pulpit, he coughed, loosened his tie, apologized. He'd come here tonight, he said, among strangers, after years in prison, to ask forgiveness. I swallowed hard, felt my legs tighten. I was 12 years old. I'd never met a murderer before. I wanted to ask how he did it, if killing someone was just like on TV, if he feared hell. I thought about my own sins, stealing candy bars, cursing God when I fell and cut my knee, throwing rocks at a neighbor girl. Later that night, my mother and I, along with others from the church, drove across Route 39 to the corrections facility. Rain drizzled, lightning veined the eggplant sky. We gathered outside the razor wire. Our shoes sank in the mud and wet grass, and wax from the candles we were given dripped on our fingers. Someone started to sing On Eagle's Wings, and a thin line of prisoners marched into view on the opposite side of the fence. Suddenly, as if an invisible cord had been pulled, they began to wave their hands and sway. While in the distance, a sleepy guard in the watchtower held us in his crosshairs, the way I imagined God held us in his hands. This is called Poem About My Father Disguised as the End of the World. This landscape is a facade, propped up horizon of corkboard and tin, curve of flesh, lick of salt. It's all we can do to endure the next few hours. Gridlock on the drive home, the unavoidable reckoning of empty rooms. Who can say for certain we are not descended from the stars? When I was a boy, I lay in bed while my veins burned. My father was an asteroid. Some nights I caught sight of him crashing through space. Other times he was the whiskey in my glass, the voice crying no. The almanac predicts a treacherous end. There'll be no more pleasantries. No more high-speed streaming of your favorite natural disaster. No VIP value meals or cream in your coffee. So call down the gods if you want. The traffic police, insurance men. They're all smoke signals in the fog. Hawkers on the midway. Nails bitten down. When I was at Duke's having a beer with Robert, I found out that we both really like Samuel Beckett. And this is my prose poem about inviting him for dinner, inviting Samuel Beckett for dinner. I assured him the room would be dark, the food bland, soup perhaps, with potatoes, a leek, a crust of day-old bread. He arrived 10 minutes early, dressed like an undertaker on holiday. His gaunt frame, a cross between a reptile and some undetermined species of prehistoric bird, marched to the table. I was shocked at his smile, his hiccup of laughter, how he pulled out the chair for me and gave it a good thrust once I sat. Then he poured the wine, his spiked hair catching the light from the lone bulb, casting outrageous shadow puppets on the wall. I have two more poems. This one has been troubling me for a long time, and I don't know if it's done or what. It's called Chopin's Heart, and I read a story in the newspaper a while ago about how the composer Frederick Chopin's heart was found in a pillar in a church in Poland, in a jar. Chopin's heart. A brief apocalypse has taken possession of my person. The streets are full of melancholy. Yesterday, I fell asleep on the bus. The sound of someone crying startled me. Was it the woman slumped in her seat like a bag of laundry? Or my mother, 40 years ago, the night Elvis died, and I held her hand as she trembled at the kitchen table. In the Times today, a story about Chopin's heart, found submerged in a brown liquid thought to be cognac. On his deathbed, he asked that his heart be cut out and returned to his beloved Warsaw. Imagine if our own hearts could be extracted and one day discovered, swaddled like unholy relics. The first depiction of a heart as a symbol of romantic love dates from the 13th century in a French manuscript where a kneeling lover offers his heart to a damsel. In a tiny box marked My Tragedy, Chopin kept letters from his lover, Marie Delgas, who refused to marry him because of his lifelong ill health. Researchers found his heart massively enlarged and floppy and covered in a white substance that gave it a frosted appearance. It's getting late. The sun has sunk below the rooftops on Highland Avenue. In the dim glow of my apartment, I listen to Elvis's early recordings and think about my mother, 150 miles away. I think about life's little tragedies, all the stories that never make the front page, suicides, bankruptcies, love affairs gone awry, the hurt we carry like wet laundry. I've never been to Warsaw or Memphis or composed music for the piano. I was born with dextrocardia, among other abnormalities, a rare condition in which the apex of the heart is located on the right side of the body. I was coddled. No one expected I'd live to be an adult, let alone past 40. I've often wondered what would Elvis be like today if he had lived. Some say he was obsessed with death, that he visited funeral homes late at night to stare at the bodies. Chopin, a leading symbol in the Romantic era, feared being buried alive from an early age. In the quietness, I feel blood pulse through my veins, feel my heart thump and flutter like a trapped bird. Each night, I cut it out and place it in a box under my bed, somewhere safe, lest I wake suddenly in the pitch dark with only the dank earth for comfort. Thanks. I have one last poem. It's called Everything That Brought Us Here. It's about fate, I think. Sometimes we're misplaced commas in each other's lives, transient as the moth that greets us when we wake in the middle of the night in search of a cracker or that half-finished beer in the fridge. Maybe we're nothing more than a string of moments scattered like photographs after a fire, or the collision of neutrons caught in a gravitational wave event. In another dimension, we could be kings, auto mechanics, or tap dancers. If a man, let's call him Andrew, gets off the bus at 12th and Smithfield and walks three blocks south toward the library, and if Amy leaves a coffee shop and walks three blocks north and one block west, will they meet? Yesterday, I saw an old man at the bus stop moaning, and a boy with wings strapped to his back fly above the city's tallest buildings. Besieged with regret, nostalgic for places we've never been, and realizing that our cells are constantly dying, we wander through this labyrinth of life, crying over used tea bags in the sink, letters never sent, the body's determined betrayal. My lover traveled 6,500 miles southwest from Indiana to Japan, and another 6,600 miles northeast to Pittsburgh. I drove 3 miles down Swissvale Avenue to an art gallery for a poetry reading and potluck dinner. And though we were both there that night, we would not meet for another year. One day my mother was in a car accident. At the hospital, X-rays revealed she was pregnant and there was something wrong. What would our lives be like without cell phones, birth defects, TV dinners, or poetry? Falling asleep to rain dripping through a leaky roof. A punctuation error like a detour can take us down roads we never intended to travel. Our lives go by like a car crash or supernova, in moments of ecstasy or anger, watching the sunset while washing dishes, worrying about the plans we'll leave undone, the books we'll never read. There's so much beauty in the world. Why do we waste our time acquiring things, dwelling on the past, losing ourselves in the headlines? Holed up in his tower, Daedalus still mourns Icarus's extravagant fall. Look at the two of us sitting at the table drinking wine. Each moment of our lives has brought us here. Each moment could have easily led us somewhere else. Thank you.